Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
What's Gull got? That's the question when we're talking about the case against Delphi murder suspect Richard Allen. The judge in the case, Judge Gull, this week entering an order correcting some of her previous mistakes or errors with regards to defense filings, but still, as of this moment, has not reinstated Richard Allen's attorneys. Here to discuss what these orders mean, Bob Motta, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. What's been the latest this week with Delphi and Judge Gull?
Oh, Tony, it's just the case that never sleeps, man. It's like the case that never sleeps. Every time I try to do something else, like, you know, I'm doing this Avery deep dive.
Yeah.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Yeah, I mean, still, yeah, more action. Like you said, kind of leading into this week, Gull ends up, as you aptly noted, she finally drafts an order, which essentially instructs the clerk to do everything that they were asking for in the writ for the writ for mandamus. So, you know, that because there was two of those that were filed. We had the first writ that was basically saying, okay, your docket's all screwed up. There's tons of documents that you didn't put on there that should be put on there. There's documents that were on there that you took off, blah, 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 blah. So she then, knowing that she's got this due date of the 16th, which was yesterday, to get her written response on file, on the 14th, she ends up filing that order, which effectively moots, and that's M-O-O-T, not M-U-T-E, moots out or kind of voids out or makes it irrelevant, the writ for the mandamus, because she's essentially doing what they're asking the high court to make her to do. So at that point, she, you know, there's one interesting thing in there in terms of that order. So she goes ahead and she orders that the 118 documents that they had created that weird website for, that was actually very difficult to get into those documents. And as it was stated in the writ, none of them are in the petition. None of them were clearly marked what they were. So you literally had to go through and like open everything individually. Didn't show you when things were filed, you know, so there were a lot of problems with it. And frankly, it just wasn't easy to navigate. You know, if you're like an old man like me, who's somewhat tech challenged, it was difficult, you know? So basically she says, all right, like get those all on the CCS, which is the actual docketing system. And then as far as, you know, the two other things with this sheriff's, they were terming it an affidavit, but it's not really an affidavit. It's kind of like a report written by the sheriff in regards to this inmate that they were going to be transferring, who had been subpoenaed to come testify at that June hearing about getting Allen transferred out of Westville prison. And essentially this guy Bastin had written this long letter saying, look, they've been torturing me. And like, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, he goes into great detail, but you know, they've been torturing me here, you know, breaking his ankles, stabbing him with pens, you know, not treating him for the injuries, you know, soaking his mattress in urine, you know, like everything imaginable that you can imagine being done to you in a prison, they're doing to this guy. And, you know, but he also articulates that they're doing a lot of the same things, but physically and mentally torturing Richard Allen as well, which was the reason that they were going to try to bring him in to have him testify. And he's basically saying in this letter, look, I'm afraid to come testify, because I feel if I do come testify, that what's going on now, which is already horrible, is going to get worse. So he's basically writing a letter to the judge saying, look, thanks, but no thanks. Like, I'm trying to stay alive here. And I feel like if I come testify, that may not be the case, you know? So that's essentially going on. So she's now, which she had originally sealed those, which is interesting. I don't understand why she ever would have sealed that letter. Should have been open and obvious for everybody to see. And you know that when that letter comes right around the time when this hearing's taking place, it makes it seem nefarious. Now, whether it was her intent for it to seem that way or not, but you know when the subject matter of that hearing is to get Richard Allen out of there for reasons that they're claiming are similar to what's going on with this guy, and then she decides, instead of allowing the defense to see it, which I don't know if they saw it or not, you know, but the public certainly didn't see it. It just makes it seem shady.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this guy's complaining of all the things that the defense is coming in here and complaining about with respect to Allen. And now she's like filing this thing under cover of darkness. It's like all these little things are the things that make you wonder what Gull is doing. Like, what is her motivation behind doing this stuff? Like, I don't think that Judge Gull is in cahoots with anybody to screw Richard Allen, at least objectively. Mm-hmm. Do I think that she has zero regard for this guy's constitutional rights? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what she's doing in terms of how she's handling this case is my proof of it. You know, yeah. I don't have to be a mind reader to see that she has very little regard for his constitutional rights. So ultimately, she files that order a couple of days later, yesterday to me, a matter of fact. She drops her response. Response, frankly, is well written. You know, it was defended properly. I think that they make strong arguments. I think that on the technical side of it, she's correct in the sense that this should have been brought to the lower court prior to and had it their motion denied by the lower court before they you know, motioned it up to the high court.
Sure.
You know, but when you read the original petition, they acknowledge that is typically what's supposed to happen. So they acknowledge that they skipped a step early on. Like, and I'm talking about the relator, Richard Allen, and his lawyers. They knew that they skipped that critical step in terms of being able to go up to the high court. But then they tried to say, well, this is why we did it. You know, there was extraordinary circumstances and these are what they are. And this is why we had to skip that step. Whether or not the Supreme Court's going to find that to be compelling enough for them to agree with Richard Allen and his attorney is yet to be seen. The bottom line is, however, that it's not going to matter because she cured like a vast majority of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like all the docket stuff, she basically, number one, threw the clerk under the bus. So that she had a couple of moves. She had the move of, all right, they didn't follow the rules. So just without even getting into the merits of it, like the Supreme Court should just reject it because they didn't follow the rules. So just as a technical violation of the rules, they shouldn't even get to the merits of it. If you get to the merits of it, you can't blame me because the CCS is the clerk's responsibility alone. I have no responsibility over the docket. So that's her argument as to that. You know, like I reject that because when you look at these gaping holes, like, I think she's right on the technical side of it. And if the court doesn't find that there was extraordinary circumstances or that, you know, these are issues that could not be handled on appeal after conviction, like that this is the only way for them to get it done. If the court, you know, doesn't buy that, then it gets rejected on those reasons. Never get to the merit stuff. But if they do get to the merit stuff, I think she makes a weak argument there. Like, I just don't think like the clerk is not responsible for preparing court orders, meaning drafting it, making a ruling, and then signing it. That is the judge.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's gaping holes in terms of court dates that have taken place and there's no order drafted, it's not the responsibility, or is it even in the purview? Like, the clerk cannot write court orders and sign them. It's not their role.
Yeah.
You know, that can only be done by the judge. So those gaping holes in the docket are going to fall at the feet of the judge ultimately. But like I said, I mean, the judge is smart enough to know like that this is how they were going to play it. They know that the much bigger fight is the upcoming petition, which is clearly a way, way more serious set of circumstances because it really involves the nuts and bolts of the case. You know, they're trying to get his attorneys reinstated. They're trying to get her pulled off the case. And they're, you know, they're obviously trying to stay or delay everything that's going on at the trial level. So, you know, that's where the real fight is. And I think that she realized, okay, look, I'm going to fix everything ahead of time. We'll still prepare the response for this first one. But, you know, I don't want to go into the second one having lost the first one.
Sure.
So I think that she made the curative actions. I think she made the strong technical argument. I think she made the much weaker argument. And then the kind of the thing that stuck with me like the most in both her order, where she related back to the memo, you know, the controversial 136-page memo, where she says, look, okay, like subsequent counsel, or I'm sorry, successor counsel has the ability to be able to adopt the memo and ask for the Franks hearing, which I will schedule. Or if they don't, then I won't, you know, and she basically doesn't give it, but she also instructs new counsel that if they do adopt it, that they have to redact it. So I read that court order. I'm like, redact what? I'm like, that, the thing's out there. Like, it's like, she's trying to act like the thing doesn't exist in the world and we haven't all seen it and that it's not out there. It's like, what is the point of a redaction when the cat's already out of the bag?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then when you kind of get to her response, she clarifies and she gets to the specifics. She's saying, I made these confidential because the defense filed this and had not redacted the victims' names.
Okay.
Now, I've been searching in Indiana law. You know, there are certainly circumstances, especially when you've got victims that are not deceased, but are still living, that are juvenile. They'll oftentimes just use their initials or will completely redact the names altogether in order to protect their identity because they're still alive.
Sure.
They want to, you know, but in a unfortunate situation where you've got victims that are deceased, you know, you're not necessarily concerned about their privacy rights because they're not alive to have privacy rights. So that argument kind of falls on deaf ears. And I'm on top of that, you know, I'm going back searching through the state's filings and I see at least two filings where the state themselves had used both the girls' names, full names, and they weren't redacted and she didn't make those confidential. So, you know, there's just like constant weird stuff going on with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want this thing to get straightened out.
Yeah. I mean,
so we can have a fair trial, man.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play or free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.